And now someone we just want you to meet. Journalist Heather Lindy writes for the Alaska Dispatch News, but she's also responsible for the obituaries for the Chilkat Valley News in her tiny town of Haines, Alaska, population 2,000. How can you possibly find anything new to tell people about someone who's died in a town that small? But Heather does, and as she writes, she finds the good, which have become her words to live by and the title of her new little book, Find the Good. Heather, welcome.
Oh, thank you. It is so nice to be here.
And to this idea that you can find something new about someone that you see almost every day. Start with the story of Russ Murray. He mowed the cemetery. Everybody saw him around town. You and a friend were charged after he died with going to, you know, help clean out his house. He had no family there. What'd you find?
Boxes and boxes of cards, greeting cards that had been sent to him. He had saved, apparently, every card that anyone had ever sent him. And what I learned when I was writing his obituary about that was that he had left home. He had been from Maine, and he had left home and joined the service, and for whatever reason had been out of contact from his family for 38 years. Mm. And it turns out that he reunited with his family at the end of his life, and all those cards and letters had been sent maybe in the last 5 years of his life. I think the thing that I learned from him most, really, or the thing that sticks with me about that obituary, is that when I asked his brother, like, what happened? His brother said to me, it doesn't matter. All that matters is that we found him again and we're reunited and we had a couple of good years together before he died.
And you would not have known this, that you had a prodigal son.
Never, never guessed it in a million years.
And also, his obituary became a message to others, stay in touch.
Yeah, you bet. And, you know, send a card because it matters.
Yeah. So there's, I mean, a story of a man who seemed to lead such a solitary life, but in the end had this lifeline through these cards to people. I mean, just a real sweetness there. Then there's another story about a life that can seem just a traditional, respectable one, but that one that can have a huge impact after death. This is Richard Boyce, a fisherman who was swept overboard
on the 4th of July.
And they could see him. I mean, this was really compelling to read this. They could see him, but
they couldn't reach him. And just the current and the way the tides were running, and his youngest daughter was on the boat with him, and the rest of the fleet escorted her home. And it was about a six-hour run from where the fishing grounds were to Haines. And the response to Richard's death was a bunch of women who are from fishing families and fishermen's wives and daughters came up with inflatable suspenders that go on your rain gear, you know, your rubber rain pants that all the fishermen wear. They got them for every single member of our fishing fleet. I think altogether it was about 175 skippers and deckhands in the salmon gillnet fleet out of Haines. And they all said, in memory of Richard Boyce, on them.
Right. We forget what fishermen's outfits look like, but they fill with water, and it's almost impossible for them to stay above water, but these suspenders would help.
Will help, yeah, if they wear them, you know. And that's the other, like, Richard didn't wear a life jacket, and most of the fishermen don't, because they say the snaps and buckles and stuff on them get tangled in the net. That can be worse. And then there's some even that say it's bad luck. If you're wearing a life jacket, then you're going to fall overboard.
But this kind of a story, being an obituary, is something that makes it so wonderfully local.
Well, yeah. And I think that's, I mean, the reason why I love writing obituaries, love, I mean, that might not be the right word, but why do it? And I've done it now for, I mean, since 1996, I think. I've written probably 400 of them. Because it seems like the more the world gets kind of homogenized, you know, with everything being sort of one, the lives of just regular people aren't celebrated as much. It's just celebrity or famous or important people that get obituaries that you read about now. And so I just think it's really important. To me, it's sort of like that Our Town thing, that someone 100 years from now can go through the archives of the Chilkat Valley News and they can see how real people lived in one small town in these couple of decades and what their lives were like, how they lived, how they died, what was important to them.
Each of these stories that you tell could be a little movie, you know, a little jewel of a movie. Every obituary seems to be a reminder. I mean, it's kind of cliched. Everybody's life is a story. But it's true.
It's true, though. And that's what I try to do when I'm writing them, is to, I think to myself, what's the story here? What's the story of their life? And then also, what's the story that, like with Russ's, that someone reading it that didn't even know him might go out and change something or affirm something that they know in that? Like, you don't even have to know Russ to read that story and be moved.
Yeah. Even Clyde has a story in him. Clyde, who told his brother-in-law that if he died, he didn't think anyone would miss him. And the whole town turns out. Why? Tell us about Clyde.
Yeah. Well, Clyde Bell had the seafood kind of store, and his wife next door had a florist shop. And Clyde, he was often, he would sort of stand on the sidewalk and talk to anybody that went by, and he'd usually be nursing a Hams beer, always smoking a cigarette. And he was a very bright guy, and he would stop me when I'm walking downtown, you know, and he would always say something like, you know, hey, gal. You know, did you see last night the sky was all different colors? And I'd say, yeah, you know, it was a beautiful sunset, Clyde. And he'd say, no, those are chemtrails. The government's salting the clouds because they want to warm up Alaska, so we're going to grow wheat. And it's a big strategic thing. And I'd, you know, thank him. And we'd have these conversations like this that I didn't actually put in the paper. But I just always enjoyed talking to him.
Yeah. Well, everybody, because it was a small town, must have known that his oldest son, Matt, drowned in a swimming accident, as you write, and that he made the connections that people make because of that. You write about another guy, Steve, who owns a wildlife park, and his ex-wife was killed by a caged tiger in Alaska. And so Clyde was giving fish scraps to feed Steve's animals in the wildlife park. I mean, people, you see all these umbilical cords or, you know, lines that tie people in town together.
Oh, yeah. My neighbor, Elizabeth, had lost her son, young, when he was 22 in a fishing accident. And Clyde always brought her flowers on Mother's Day. Mm. And she told me when he died that Clyde gave away more flowers than Doris sold, that he would just go in there and get bouquets and then show up and give them to people.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about a part of the book, which is the telling of other people's stories. But you also talk about how you are applying this thinking of finding the good to your own life. And I just want to mention one thing that you recommend. Join a choir. Sing. And in your case, the Haynes Women's A Cappella Chorus?
I think at the moment it's the Haynes A Cappella Women's Chorus. Nancy Nash, our director, likes the acronym HAWK.
And you sing at a lot of these funerals.
Yes.
And the power of a song, like you write about singing Hope, the Emily Dickinson poem set to music.
Yeah, Nancy set it to music, yeah.
Yeah, and it's such a wonderful other way to find the good. Just open your mouth.
And I think, too, it's very, I don't know, almost cliche these days, especially sort of in this season, you know, to tell young people, you know, to march to a different drummer and live the way you want to live and all those kind of things. And I think there's really a lot of value in learning how to blend your voice, how to sing with the choir, how to get along with people, how to understand even that collectively you can make something beautiful out of all these different voices and you can blend. And I think that's important.
Well, it strikes me, too, that your definition of singing in a choir, learning to blend, put voices together towards a common goal, a choir is, it's sort of like living in a small town.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's the thing is, there's people in our choir whose husbands don't speak to each other. But the women, you know, share sheet music.
Yeah.
And I think even that is an example for the rest of the community that we can all agree to keep all the stuff at the door of choir practice and go in and sing. And we just sing because we want to, and we learn songs because maybe someone will ask us to sing it. It's not like we have a regular gig. We're not a church choir or something where there's something all the time. We just have a repertoire that if someone calls us for a wedding or a funeral or a special event that they want us to sing for, we just show up and sing a few songs.
Yeah. It's all in Heather Lindy's new book, Find the Good, Unexpected Life Lessons from a Small Town Obituary Writer. Heather, thanks so much for talking to us about it.
Thank you very much for having me.
And ladies and gentlemen, the Haynes A Cappella Women's Chorus. Here and now.